Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by McKenny Hockey and BetMGM. I'm Mike Stevens. Sitting across from me is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, remember when I said that training camps and media days and all that was my favorite time of the year?
You certainly did.
I lied. I lied straight to your face on our first ever podcast we did together.
How dare you?
Which is a great way to start off our lovely partnership here. It's actually now. I love the start of the season. You know, everyone is undefeated, but then we all get to, once those couple games get to go in, we get to make, you know, sweeping judgments.
Yes.
that will almost certainly not define the rest of the season. You know, guys who barely made it out of training camp are playing that will likely not be playing at the end of the season. It's great. I love it. What about you? Do you like this time of year? Or?
I certainly do, because there's so much anticipation heading into it. And you know what's really funny, though? I get this thing where, you know, obviously certain fan bases have expectations, and that first week, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah.
So you might get a team that gets hot, you know, they win their first three games, but it's like, but we know they're going to be like the last place team. That to me is the real fun part, where it's like, you're like, hey, maybe team X isn't so bad. And then they lose like, you know, 10 of the next 15.
I will put money. And I don't have, like, I've been very clear on this show and our betting show. I don't have much.
Right.
But I will put money on the fact that the Arizona Coyotes will be like 2-0 or 3-0 to start the season.
Yeah.
And we will get a couple think pieces about how the small arena is bringing the team together.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, this is a team, this is their chip on the shoulder is going to ride them to a surprise, birth in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then it's all going to go downhill.
Yes.
We all know. It's going to be, but it's going to be magical for early season content.
Exactly.
It's going to be great. Although to start off, I mean, look, to give you a little peek behind the scenes here, we were going to talk about everything that happened with Hockey Canada. We were going to talk about, you know, all the sponsorships lost. We were going to talk about, you know, the calls for change in action. And then legitimately 2 minutes before we started recording today, the biggest sweeping change in Canadian hockey history essentially came down the pike. Hockey Canada announced that President CEO Scott Smith has departed. That's the term they use, departed. And the entire board of directors has stepped down. There will be a new management committee set up to bring in a new board of directors and hopefully enact some swift change. I mean, this is what every Canadian and every, I would say, every person who has been, you know, abreast of the situation has wanted. This is the sweeping change that everyone was wanting. You know, this is essentially the gutting of this rot, hopefully. That has been permeating Hockey Canada and is led to all of these just abhorrent discoveries that we've learned over recent weeks and months and, you know, coming up on years. What do we think of this?
Well, obviously this is, as you mentioned, what a lot of people were hoping for. And, you know, it presents such a great opportunity to reset things. Mm-hmm. And you know, certainly not, you know, forget what happened in the past.
Absolutely,
but to
not
learn from it. And to build. And, you know, it's interesting because it felt at least like for most of the recent past, you know, Hockey Canada was just a really good money-making machine.
Yes.
Right? Like if you think about it from a corporate level, because, you know, the actual success on ice, that goes to the coaches, the players, you know, the grassroots volunteers, everybody that makes that up. But in terms of like what Hockey Canada specifically, they were really good at making money and,
yeah,
you know, being a huge player on the international stage. But, you know, making money off of hockey in Canada shouldn't be that big a deal.
No, it's,
you know, it's, you know, shooting fish in a barrel.
Selling water in a drought, you know, it's something like that. Yeah,
exactly. So for me, what this opportunity brings up is you can remake this organization where you can hopefully learn from the mistakes of the past. And when you're assembling this board and we're figuring out who the leadership is going to be, you're looking into, you know, gender equality and you're looking at multiculturalism, and you're looking at, you know, how those things can help grow the grassroots game, make things stronger, and most importantly, bring back some trust and faith in the organization. So obviously you're looking way outside your usual parameters mm-hmm. of who you want on a board of directors for this particular group. And I think that's fine. I think, you know, obviously you want to have people that love the sport of hockey and have some experience there. But I think just in terms of good governance and best practices, those are almost more important right now for the organization, and sort of say, like, we need to run this like an actual corporation mm-hmm. and not this weird sort of, you know, I don't even know how to describe what Hockey Canada was before. You know, at worst, they were cynically, hiding and trying to dismiss all the terrible things that happened. And, you know, at best, naive that they could fix things behind the scenes mm-hmm. and not make sort of a huge public, scene about it. Whatever the intentions were, they were wrong.
Yes.
So now you're in a situation where you're basically starting with mostly a blank slate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, they were bureaucrats. You can find other bureaucrats. There's lots of people like that that can do that out there. But, you know, if you can find some sort of good agents of change to get in there, I mean, the infrastructure is easy. You mm-hmm. know, it's an organization that, as I said, they knew how to make money. They knew how to put a winning product on the ice, whether it was women's hockey, men's hockey, junior hockey. You know, they were there. You know, they got results. The problem was everything else.
Yes.
So now they have a chance to make it right.
Here's what I'm worried about, though, is, you know, the initial, I mean, we're kind of working through this just as you were when you first got this announcement. We literally just got it. We're working through. And one thing that stuck out to me is that, I mean, this was obviously their breaking case of emergency sort of, course of action, right? Mm-hmm. What I'm worried about is that this will now, they believe now that this will sweep everything else under the rug. It will start anew and everyone just fell on their sword and we're going to forget. No, mm-hmm. Hockey Canada was going to take the government basically to court, so they didn't have to release their financials. So we couldn't see however many other hush funds there were. You know, they just, like, there's a lot that is still left to uncover. Mm. There are likely still victims out there who have been, who could be potentially waiting for their day of justice in this. You know, there are people who oversaw and covered these up who should be, you know, subjected to like criminal action.
Totally.
And what I'm worried about is that with this happening, now that people are going to think, oh, well, the problem is solved. Mm. You know, like it washes away everything from the past. We can start new. That's not true. Unfortunately, we can't just forget. We can't just move on. Like, there has to be recourse and action. And yes, this is incredible recourse and action. Like, this is as good of this is consequences. Finally.
Yes. Yeah.
But I mean, like, these people, like Scott Smith, he said, oh, I just got here. No, he's been part of Hockey Canada for literally as long as I've been alive. I'm 26 right. years old. He got there, I believe, in 1995 or 96. That was the year I was born. So he's been there my entire life. So all I've known from Hockey Canada is what he has done. Mm. He is not the person to lead this change. And thankfully he's out. Same with the entire board of directors who okayed these hush funds and everything. But what I'm hoping for is two things. One, we don't sweep this under the rug. Uh-huh. We continue the investigations into these former people. We continue, because sitting on Hockey Canada's board, being CEO of Hockey Canada, it's not a right. You know, mm-hmm. being removed from that position is not adequate punishment. Right. You know, like it's not, you know, all right, well, you know, you lost your title. You lost your big, you know, CEO money-making job. All right, well, you learned your lesson. Mm-hmm. No, because he'll go on and be a consultant somewhere else. He'll go on and do something. Well, he needs to be brought up and put on trial, basically. And then secondly, this whoever is forming this new Hockey Canada board of directors, whoever is forming, you know, every level of Hockey Canada, transparency needs to be the key. Mm. It's transparency, transparency, transparency. Every single dollar that they get sponsorship wise, registration fee wise, you know, donation wise, everything that needs to be publicly accessible and publicly reported. So maybe not in a tweet release, but I mean, it needs to be publicly accessible in a database or just in terms of any sort of online, you know, archive. People need to be able to see how Hockey Canada spends their money, especially if they're getting government
funding.
There needs, like, this needs to be, we need to keep on the fight to bring the people who allowed thousands of lives or hundreds of lives, I guess, potentially thousands, to be ruined through this. And we also need to ensure that we set up a situation where this can never, ever happen again. Never. And that is going to be extremely difficult. And I'm a little worried that Hockey Canada itself is creating this, you know, this search committee to bring in these new board directors, because then again, it's still Hockey Canada itself doing the searching. And I mean, that goes to show the lack of trust that you were talking about, that we have in that organization. But at least this is the, I mean, this is exactly what everyone wanted, but everything needs to be transparent as like, just as possible. Like every single dime that goes in, every single penny that goes into that organization needs to be publicly accessible. And we also need to ensure that we do not stop the investigations into the crimes of the past, because that's exactly what they wanted with this. This is a break glass in case of a scenario. This is, all right, we did what everyone was calling for us. We all fell on our sword. That exonerates us. It doesn't.
Yeah. And I think accountability is the big thing there. And, you know, it almost reminds me of, you know, when you get like a new president or prime minister, just as like a financial crisis is coming, or, you know, the CEO of, you know, like a major corporation, like a car company, right when there's, you know, like a huge bailout or something, where it's like, yeah, they're new, but they still have to deal with, you know, what was left for them. And I think that is going to be big, where the type of people you bring in, you want them to be kind of proactive on this and say, okay, like, we have a lot of work to do, and we're going to do it. I also think that, you know, when you look at the provincial hockey federations, who, you know, were sort of part of this battle as well, you had the sponsors pull out, but then you also had, you know, Hockey Quebec or Ontario Hockey Federation, you had them, you know, saying, we've lost faith. We don't want to give you the money.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's going to be very important, because, again, you know, with them, you have organizations that have been doing this for a long time. They know what goes into it. They've dealt with the, you know, Hockey Canada before. I think they can be very important in saying, okay, here's what's in front of you, new board.
Yes.
Here are our expectations, and here's where you need to improve. So it's going to take a lot of people, but this is a start.
Absolutely. And it's unfortunate too that it had to get to this point for this change to happen, because, you know, we were talking about it before we started recording, but like, all of their AAA sponsors are gone. All of their high-end sponsors are gone. We have Nike, Bauer, TELUS, Tim Hortons, Canadian Tire. There was no one left. Like, if you looked at, I mean, you were at the World Juniors. Like, if you looked at the actual, you know, the ringside advertising, like, a lot of it was lacking.
There was none. The only rinks dashboard sponsor was Hublot, the watch company. And that's because they were a double IHF sponsor,
not a
Hockey Canada sponsor. Yeah, it was pretty wild.
So it's like, this is, when you look at it, you go, well, what else could they have done? There was no way they were going to weather the storm.
Yeah.
You know, the Navigator, the firm, the crisis management firm that they hired, their job was essentially to push back on this. Like, that was their thing, was push back, blame the media, do all that kind of stuff. Which is, you know, the natural, I guess, sort of way that people, the natural sort of modus operandi that people use in situations like this these days. Thank you, Trump. But there was no other recourse for this. There was no other, like, it's a shame that this rightful action had to happen, because they got backed into a wall. There was no way that this organization could feasibly continue in a financial sense. All of their sponsors pulled out. All of their other surrounding organizations that funnel money into them had pulled out. There was basically no cash income in there anymore. There was no money flow. And so you go, okay, well, at this point, like, there's nothing left for us to do. Opposed to where you would like to do, what you would like to happen is these things come out, you know, you get taken to Parliament, it gets revealed as it did, and then the people go, well, clearly I am doing something wrong here, I'm stepping down. No, right. This was like, this was as much of a gun, this was a bazooka to the head. This wasn't just a gun. So let's not give them credit. Let's not, like, what I'm worried about is people going to go like, well, they finally did the right thing.
Right.
No, they did the right thing under duress. They did the right thing because they were forced to. That's not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
If you hold me at gunpoint and say, give money to this homeless man outside instead of kicking him or something, that's not me being a good person.
Yeah.
That's me doing something because I was forced to do it. And that's exactly what they did here. And so we need to, for people are going to go and say, well, finally, like I said, at least they did the right thing. It took forever, but no, They don't deserve credit for this. No. And you know exactly why. Because for someone, we were going to talk about it, Andrea Skinner, the interim board of interim chair of the board when she stepped down, even her statement was what just went to show that this organization, everyone in it is so obtuse. They don't understand the gravity of the situation. They still don't understand what they did wrong. She was framing it as, well, I'm a volunteer. I'm doing you a favor. And it's just not worth my time anymore. So I'm going to step down.
Right.
You know, like this, these are the people we're dealing with. Yeah. They got forced to do this, basically kicking and screaming. This is not their, you know, choice of free will. This is their, well, the organization is going to literally fall into ruin. Financial ruin.
Yeah.
If we don't do this, so I guess we have to. Let's not give them too much credit for that.
Fair.
Yeah. All right. You wanna? I guess move on to hockey.
Yes.
On the ice, that'd be great. I guess our final thoughts would be good riddance. Hopefully, there will be positive change.
Indeed.
Moving forward. All right. The opening night of the NHL is today. It's Tuesday.
Right.
Depending on when this comes up, yeah. When this gets posted, you're gonna be able to watch hockey, either the first game tonight or on Wednesday tomorrow. A lot happened over the weekend.
Indeed.
For our Canadian listeners out there, I'm sure you had a great time checking Twitter while your family judged you in the living room, because I certainly did. I believe it was 64 players got placed on waivers on, it was Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then the Monday waiver, a shockingly small amount of players got claimed, actually. I was expecting a lot more.
Cap crunch,
baby. It's insane. And it's there, real. I want to bring up, and as we go in here, I want to bring up some of the most perfect cap LTIR placements that we've seen in the last couple of days. Cause nice. I'm not, have you seen any of
there
these?
There was a couple of fun ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll go through that. Ryan, let's go through some of these teams alphabetically. Let's talk about some of the interesting, you know, opening night sort of shifting and shimmying that these teams have done. Mm-hmm. Arizona, obviously, the number one. They're always active on waivers. Mm-hmm. That's basically the only way they can get players at this point is forcibly bringing them to Arizona. They grabbed Yusuf Alamaki, which I think is actually a worthwhile pickup. You know,
for
like
sure.
He's a former first-round pick. He obviously, you know, wasn't going to make it in Calgary. Apparently things had stalled there. Mm-hmm. But so they picked him up. He's a good defenseman. And then Connor Ingram, who actually got into some playoff games for the Predators last year, and didn't look all too bad. Looked better than David Riddick, I can tell you that. So, and because of that, Jonas Johansson and Jacob Chychrun are both hurt. What do we think of Arizona's moves?
I like it a lot. And, you know, we're at the point where, yeah, we know Arizona's rebuilding. Yeah. They're going to be probably one of the weakest teams in the NHL. You know, if they got Connor Bedard first overall, that would be huge in their rebuild. But, you know, just picking up little assets here and there. And, you know, and Connor Ingram, you know, as you mentioned, a goalie that can give you some starts. So
he can play.
So you go, you know, and Karl Vejmelka, you know, we saw him have some pretty good runs last year.
Came out of nowhere.
Yeah. So, you know, your goaltending, I think, improved right there. And it didn't cost you anything because it was waivers. And then, yeah, Valimaki, very interesting because Calgary essentially had too many good defensemen.
Yep.
And, you know, this is a player who his development curve really got stunted by injuries.
Yes.
And I believe he's 24 years old right now, 24,
young.
25. But in terms of actual experience and ice time, it's been a bit of a struggle. Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, first round pick, you know, can do a lot out there on the ice, had some offensive upside, you know, has size, he can defend as well. So for a team like Arizona, especially with Chychrun on the shelf to begin the year, you say, hey, free defenseman and one that has some nice potential. You know, like I think Valimaki, if he can find his range, you're looking at like a second pairing guy at this point, especially in Arizona. I mean, heck, you know, they might even put him on the first pairing. Who knows? I mean, you know, Shane Gostisbehere is obviously going to be, you know, up there. But otherwise, you know, they have a lot of sort of defensive defensemen.
Yeah.
On that roster, and Valimaki is a two-way guy, so he can kind of help out there. So, you know, and Dylan Gunther made the roster, which is very positive. He was a high pick for them. And again, you know, with Arizona, this is a year where it's okay, let's see who's going to step up, because, you know, we're looking towards the future. We want to figure out who our cornerstones are. Mm-hmm. And I think that Valimaki gets a great opportunity to kind of start fresh here, because he was frankly blocked in Calgary by a super strong lineup. So now he gets a chance to spread his wings, and hopefully he stays healthy.
And the best thing that Arizona's looking for is asset management. It's cost control. Valimaki, like you say, he's 24, so he's still pretty young. I mean, I'm 26.
There you go.
So hopefully 24 is still pretty young. If not, then my life is peaked at this point. But he's making 1.55.
Yep.
And then he's an RFA upon expiry.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? He can't even leave if he wants to. He's got to stay.
Yeah.
So that's pretty great. Like we said, Connor Ingram, he's a body. He can give you starts.
Yeah.
He played the Colorado Avalanche in the first round of the playoffs and didn't look terrible.
There you go.
What else do you want to? What else do you want to see? All right, moving on. We have Columbus, a very intriguing team.
Yes.
Very intriguing team going into the season. They have a sneaky, like they're building a good little young core there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like Johnny Gaudreau's not young, but I mean like they got some, you know, they got Boquist, they got, you know, like we're talking about here, Kent Johnson, mm-hmm. Matthew Olivier, Justin Danforth, those three made the team. But no Kirill Marchenko, no David Yurchek, and they waived Emil Bemström.
Yeah, so this is really interesting because, you know, Kirill Marchenko is a prospect that really developed well back in Russia. And then he's coming over here. There's a lot of excitement, big body. He's like built like a linebacker. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all the Ohio State fans, I'm sure, are pretty psyched about that in Columbus.
The Ohio State University.
The Ohio State University, exactly. Yeah, a lot of potential there. But for some reason, they weren't feeling him at camp, so they send him to Cleveland. And at the time, it felt like it was like Emil Bemström was the one that benefited, but then obviously he was
But he's still on the team, I guess, now, right? Like, he hasn't been sent down officially, has he?
Not to my knowledge. Not right now. But, you know, Kent Johnson makes the team, so that's very exciting. You know, we saw a bit of him at the end of last year coming out of the University of Michigan.
High draft pick, exciting.
Yeah, and awesome at the World Juniors this summer in Edmonton. Obviously, you know, had the golden goal. And just really, I mean, he's more of a playmaker than a shooter, and he was dishing off amazing passes all tournament long. So it was kind of funny that he got the goal coming off an amazing pass from Logan Stankoven. But Kent Johnson's super fun to watch, so it'll be neat to see what they do. But, you know, very interesting, Matthew Olivier, who, you know, he's a tough guy. He can drop the gloves for you. And then Justin Danforth, just sort of a speedy energy guy, like took the route not usually seen. He played for Sacred Heart. You know, he went over to Europe. He's been in all over the minors, but, you know, spent a good chunk of the time with Columbus last year, so he earns it. Yurchek, it's not really a surprise to me necessarily that he didn't make the team, but it's interesting that they decided to start him in Cleveland in the AHL, because obviously they could have sent him back to Europe. But I get the sense that, you know, it's good to have him just down the road in Cleveland, where they can keep tabs on him. He gets used to the North American game. Mm-hmm. You know, if they need him to come up to the NHL and play a bit, they can obviously do that. I thought he was pretty good at the World Juniors this summer as well. Really had to do a lot on that Czech back end, but he's got the big shot and he's got the big body. So just kind of interesting to see that they did send him down, but it makes sense.
They were one thing that really stood out to me about Yurchek, especially at the draft, and we were both there, but also even in further sort of like research that I've done, is that Columbus is like over the moon to have gotten this guy.
Uh-huh.
This is their guy. They wanted him from the start, and they were like, the fact that he fell to them, because they were very worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
They were overjoyed. They were thrilled to get him at the draft. You could tell. And then also, I've been watching the because I'm a single guy who lives alone, so I have a lot of like I my day is not filled with family and all that. I get to watch YouTube and stuff, and I've been watching the Columbus Blue Jackets sort of behind the scenes, interesting little sort of like half an hour. I guess I want to call it a documentary. It's a show, I guess.
Sure.
And they did a whole thing on the draft. And if you look behind the scenes, it's very candid too. And if you look behind the scenes, like these dudes were like basically like about to open mouth kiss each other when they got this guy. Like, he was thrilled. And so I can see why they don't want to rush him in the NHL.
Mm.
They're doing the smart thing, but they don't want to send him back to back overseas, because they realize, like, you know, it'll be a hassle to get him back.
Yeah.
They want to start him in Cleveland. They believe in the Cleveland Monsters. Like, the Cleveland Monsters, very low key. They're not really looked at as one of like the top developmental pipelines, but they've graduated a lot of players from Cleveland, and a lot of very good players. And you know, they put a lot of work into that minor league team. And they want to have him close. They want to have him in that state. They want to make sure that he can develop, you know, on North American ice. He can continue to prove and I guess sort of go through those progressions that you need to go through to become an NHLer, but to do it, you know, like we talked about with our Slefkovský conversation last week,
right?
Where, you know, do it without the eyes on you, do it in big minutes, but you can make mistakes. I like it. I really do. Bemstrom's going to be interesting because he makes 900 grand. Mm-hmm. You know, he's 20, I believe he's 23. So he's even younger, than a guy like Valimaki. You know, he has potential. He was really good overseas. And he was okay when he came in the 2019-20 season. I think it was 10 goals, 10 assists, 20 points in 54 games, which, you know, for like a 19-year-old at the time, it's not bad. Mm-hmm. Some teams could potentially take a chance on him. And the best part about that is he's cleared waivers, so he can be sent up and down between the AHL, I believe, for the next 30 days without waivers. So that's a huge benefit. I think we're going to see a Bemstrom trade coming down the pipe. What that return might be, we don't know, but the fact that Columbus has so many players that they don't need a guy like Emil Bemstrom, or they don't even at this time, they don't need a guy like Kirill Marchenko or David Yurchek. I think that speaks to just how improved their roster is, right?
For sure. And I think the fact that Cole Sillinger went right to the NHL really kind of helped them in terms of their depth, where that was kind of a nice little bonus. And then Kent Johnson obviously developing the way he did. You know, Igor Chinnikov is the cliche, but he's a year older now, but he does have more experience, and he had a sizzling preseason, led the NHL in goals. So can he do that in the regular season now? That's the big
ask. He cannot lead the NHL in goals in the regular season. I'm going to go on record.
I'm probably not. Yeah. But it's also nice because you don't want to gift roles to youngsters. And so you can say to guys like Johnson and Chinnikov, like, look, if it's not working, we got Marchenko champing at the bit in Cleveland to come up. So,
like, look at that.
Come on.
Yeah. All right. Los Angeles. Speaking of Hockey Canada blunders, and this is an on-ice one.
Right.
It's very funny that, you know, like months after Brandt Clark was deemed not good enough to play for the Canadian World Junior team, he has now made the Los Angeles Kings opening night roster. That's pretty remarkable, I think.
Yeah, and you know what? What I like about this is that, you know, Brandt Clark, tremendous offensive defenseman, great mind for the game. You know, he played some pro games during the pandemic
right overseas.
I love him coming to Los Angeles now because he can get so much from Drew Doughty.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Drew Doughty on the ice, I mean, we've seen what he's done throughout his career. And, you know, Doughty had a nice bounce back last year. But just having that mentorship, and, you know, they have some other good defensemen there that can move the puck as well. But, I mean, Doughty has seen it all. He's done it all, whether it's Stanley Cups or, you know, the Olympics. You know, he just has such a huge resume. To have that connective tissue in L.A., and that's what I like the most about this. It wasn't even really a rebuild. It was just kind of a retool with LA, where, you know, they had some down years, but then they kept guys like Kopitar and Doughty, where, again, you know, with Quentin Byfield, he has a tremendous mentor in Andre Kopitar as a big center, you know, with a lot of potential. And then even adding Philippe Deneau, who's a different type of center. He doesn't have the size, but it's just so great for a young center like Byfield to have those guys to look up to and just watch them practice. I think with Brandt Clark, it's the same thing with Doughty, where he can look at him and be like, okay, like, we're not exactly the same player, but we have a lot of the same upside, and I'm going to watch him and see what he does on the ice and follow him around. And that'll be a great, I think, learning experience for him.
You know what's, first of all, I love what teams do. I love how teams do this sometimes, where if you're a young guy and you've earned it, you get it. Mm-hmm. That's what I like. Because some teams, they purposefully don't give the opportunities to young guys through a sense of, you know, like, even though you've earned it, we need to defer to the veteran, or you need to earn your stripes. No, like, if Brandt Clark played as well as he did in the preseason, if Brandt Clark earned an NHL job in the preseason and in training camp, which he did, he played incredibly well, give it to him. See what he can do.
Totally.
And you look at LA's defense, and what's the most sparse asset in the NHL right now?
It's been right shot D.
You want to know how many right shot D LA has?
How many they got?
They got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of their 7 are right shot.
Wow.
And those 5 are Doughty, Matt Roy, Or Matt Waugh, however you want to pronounce it, Sean Walker, Sean Dursey, Brant Clark. And then even in their non-rosters, Tobias Bjornfoot.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Like it's Bjornfoot. And then even a guy like Jordan Spence coming up. He's a right shot. This is a remarkably built team. Like, yeah. And they still have $1.255 million in cap space. There and we're going to get into some of the cap interesting situations, if you want to say it. But, I mean, this is a remarkably built team. They're going to be a real problem this year.
Yeah. And again, it's fun to see that sort of transition from one era to another, especially because we're getting the Dustin Brown statue this year. So it's like, you know, that he was part of that crew that, you know, got LA their cups.
Yes.
And then some of his teammates, as we said, are still there. But they have all this great youth bubbling up. And, you know, Clark, I don't know if it was a one-for-one thing, but Bjornfoot is a guy that's played in the NHL before, and he doesn't make the team. Brant Clark does. So, again, you know, it's like you can't be comfortable because there's guys, you know, bubbling up from below. And, you know, Kim Nousiainen is another player that did not make the roster, but I've seen him play some very good hockey in his development years as well, another young guy. So it's fun because the assets are there.
And, like, you have depth.
You got depth.
Like, let's say Brant Clark doesn't play well, or let's say you get an injury. You have a Bjornfoot that you can just bring up. He's in the same state. He's in Ontario.
Exactly.
Like it's
exactly
Ontario, California. It's fantastic. I think what the job they've done. You're right. It hasn't really been a strict rebuild. Like they haven't sold off a crazy ton of assets, but they put themselves in a position where they got a ton of young players, young talent, really, and then they were able to build that around an established core. Supplemented with pieces like a Philip Deneau, like a Kevin Fiala, like guys like that. Picked up some under the radar ads. Like I'll always stand for Trevor Moore. You know, he's my favorite.
Right.
He's my favorite guy. And he blossomed last year.
Certainly
he's
did.
Like, you know, 50-point player. Like that's they did a great job. All right, Montreal again. Maybe the team with the most most intrigue, I guess, towards the roster cut down line because they had a lot. They're not going to be very good this year, but they have a lot of young players. Fighting for these spots and a lot of great stories too, I think that could be fighting for these spots. And mainly it's that Jonathan Kovacevic. There we go. Jordan Harris, Caden Gooley, and Arbor Jacki. I got it. They've all made the team. Jacki was sent down just for a cap purpose and he was recalled before we started recording.
Yeah.
They did this to give Justin Barron some more time in the AHL. What do we think of these guys? Kovacevic was a waiver. I guess sort of like ad from Winnipeg, right?
Yes. And, you know, he might end up going down,
he can.
Because
he's cleared. Or no, he didn't. He got claimed. So no, we can't. They have to put him on waivers to send him down again.
Right. Yeah. And they might have to do that anyways. Because, you know, Joel Edmondson is hurt right now. But I don't think he's too far off. But... you know, Kovacevic, big body, played for Merrimack College in the NCAA. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. But it's fun because, you know, and Arbor Jacki has been kind of one of the great internet stories I found. Like, he's kind of always trending on Twitter. And it's interesting because, you know, he started his OHL career off in Kitchener. And I do remember seeing him in his draft year. And it's like, okay, well, you know, there's an interesting frame there, but he was still kind of developing and finding himself. And he's not a big points guy, but by the end of it, and if I'm not mistaken, he ended with Hamilton.
He did, yes.
Winning an OHL championship. You know, now he's this physical, nasty guy. We saw in the preseason, you know, he'll take on anybody. He doesn't care.
He was living rent-free in DJ Smith's head for a little bit there.
There you go, yeah. You know, fought Austin Watson.
Yeah.
Big dude.
That's not
fun.
That's not an insignificant guy to fight.
No. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so he makes it. So he gives them a nice look there. And again, you know, a young team, you want to make sure that you're all sticking up for each other. Jordan Harris is somebody that's been on the radar for a while now. Great puck moving defenseman. Had a really nice career at Northeastern University. So it'll be fun to see what he does. And then obviously Caden Gooley is somebody, a first rounder who, you know, again, you know, great international resume, awesome skater. And, you know, it's kind of funny that the defense is so young right now with Edmondson out. You got David Savard, obviously.
And you got Mike Matheson, too.
You got Mike Matheson. Yep. But you have all these young guys, and they're totally different players, which I think is very fun. And, yeah, you know, they're going to have their struggles. They're going to make mistakes. But this is the year to do it because, you know, Montreal's probably not going to be a playoff team. Mm-hmm. So let's see what they can all do. Let's see who establishes themselves this year and maybe secures a spot for the next several years down the line.
Yeah, it's fun experimentation, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think for a guy like St. Louis, who, you know, is a mad scientist, he likes to shake some things up. Like, you have so many different assets at your disposal now. Yeah. You can you know, shelter one guy while throwing another guy to the wolves. You can do all, it'll be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. New Jersey, shout out to the guy who I did my first magazine feature on, Simon Nemec.
There you go.
I'm always going to have a soft spot for him because he was a great interview and he likes F1 and he doesn't have time to watch Netflix. That's a big thing that I got from him.
There you go.
He made the team, second overall pick, you know, very talented right shot defenseman. I think, you know, like he's like Juracek where he could go down to the AHL if they really wanted to. He just absolutely tore up the Slovakian league last year. Like, yes. he was a superstar as a 19-year-old, 18-year-old. He was too good really for that league. So I think this is the better developmental option to either keep him in the NHL or send him down. But then we also have Kevin Ball, the main sort of return from the Taylor Hall trade, who is starting in the AHL. He could come up. He's had some very brief, I guess, auditions or cameos in the NHL, you want to call it. Mm. New Jersey is another team that they're not going to be that good this year. We really don't think. They've added some pieces that would suggest they think they're going to be good this year. Andre Palat, you know, another year of Dougie Hamilton, you know, guys like that. But I'm really intrigued to see what Nemec does because he's so talented. He's got so many gifts. He does everything really well. I feel like his game out of any of the defenders that were picked, and I know it's not really a hot take to say the second overall pick, like the top defenseman is going to do this, but I think in terms of any defenseman that was picked this year, his game could translate best to the NHL right from the hop, I think. Mm.
And it's interesting because he didn't have a strong camp. I think a lot of Devils fans were surprised that he made the final roster. And, you know, again, it's early days. We might see some movements up and down and whatnot. Yeah. But it's interesting. I'm going to be intrigued to see how New Jersey handles him. Like, is this the sort of thing where he gets 9 games? You know, do they send him down? Like, I mean, I guess they still could send him to Europe if they wanted to.
they could whenever
they could do whatever, you know. Is it the sort of thing where, you know, he watches a game from the press box, then he plays a game? You know, at what point do they bring Kevin Ball up? They're completely different defensemen because Kevin Ball is humongous.
Huge.
I think he's 6'7", he's probably huge. 230, maybe 240. Simon Nemec, obviously, you know, a mobile 6-foot puck mover, can do a lot of things for you there. So that's an intriguing situation because it's not like Nemec forced their hand.
Yes.
So what's the roster look like in 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now? That to me is very interesting.
They also already have three like top six right shot defensemen. Like, their right side's actually pretty legit. They have, you know, Dougie Hamilton, John Marino, and David Severson.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, unless you're going to get Nemec to plan his offside, which, I mean, if you have a right shot, a youngster, like, I don't know why you'd want to make him do that.
Yeah, someone else switches.
It's very, but then, like, are you going to, yeah, maybe someone else switches, who knows? But, I mean, this is, like, that's a very good right side for a team that's not, you know, and then, unfortunately, you have the, you know, Ryan Graves, Jonas Siegenthaler, and then Brandon Smith on the other side. Yeah. Who's also listed as a winger here on Cap Friendly, which is interesting. Hopefully for fantasy too, that'd be great. But it's odd. I guess you're right. Like, the more I think about it, the more I feel like they're going to do the maybe one game in, one game out, you know, like sort of a part-time type player to learn. But then again, like, is that the best for development? Is that the best? Do you want to have this sort of like thoroughbred, this raw thoroughbred, sort of sitting in the stables watching everyone else race?
Right.
But then again, like, who do you take out and who do you, like, do you put someone on their offside? Then again, that adds some odd stuff. It's a fluid situation. Yeah. Very interested to see.
And quick sidebar on the whole handedness.
Yes.
It was really interesting where, you know, at the player media tour, Quinn Hughes from Vancouver was talking about playing on his offside. And he was saying he might actually like it better because he was theorizing that he can do more, that sometimes, you know, when he's on his right side or his correct side, I guess, he can, you know, he'll go down the wall and then he's kind of trapped. He's like, you know, if I'm on my offhand, I might have more options from the blue line of different sort of avenues. So I wonder, you know, is that something that a John Marino might consider if necessary? Because, you know, he's the type of guy that can also contribute offensively, or even Dougie Hamilton for that matter. So I don't know, just something I've been thinking.
And something that's definitely on the same line, same scale as that is that when I play NHL, 22, I'm a defenseman. I shoot left, but I like to play right D.
Well, there you go.
And I think it's just because it opens up the pass lanes a bit. I'm on the right side, but my stick is towards the center of the ice, which allows me to do sort of cross rink passes more, maneuver a little bit better. Off the faceoff, it's a little different just because you're not in sort of like a one-timer scenario, but it doesn't really matter. And that, like I said, is definitely on the same level as Quinn Hughes switching it up.
I was going to say, you are the Quinn Hughes of video games.
I am. Yes. There's not even a joke to be made about that because it's just so serious and true. All right, the team that everyone's been waiting for, the team that is one of the most perfect LTIR placement teams we can have. I have more money literally in my pocket right now than they do have cap space.
Amazing.
I have a $5 bill in my wallet. The Toronto Maple Leafs have $4 in cap space right now. Remarkable. Brandon Prinham, and I'm barely kidding when I say this, should be on Legends Row. Like, he is, I don't know. He had to commit like tax fraud or something to do that, right? Like, it's crazy. So a lot has happened here because the Leafs, they waived, you know, like Adam Gaudette didn't make the roster. So he got waived. He cleared. Kyle Clifford, same thing. Waived, cleared. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, Victor Mete, Jordy Benn is on IR, but I'm assuming they're going to waive him and then he'll probably clear when that happens. The big thing here too, there are a couple things, is Wayne Simmonds. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the Toronto, according to Elliot Friedman, sent a mass email to the rest of the league on, I believe it was Sunday morning or Monday, either one, saying basically, look, Wayne Simmonds is available. The return in a trade is not as important as doing right by the player because, I mean, that organization loves Wayne Simmonds. You know, he's a great person. He's one of the best locker room people in the league. Everyone loves him. But unfortunately, he's not good enough to make this Toronto Maple Leafs roster out of camp. Like, he's the way that they want to redo their bottom six, specifically their fourth line, add skill, some forechecking, some youth. And they've done that with Nicholas Obey-Cabell and also with Zach Aston-Reese. He just didn't fit there. He was not fast enough. And that really hurt the team last year, you know, when it was a plodding, you know, Spezza, Simmonds, Clifford line. So he's waived. He's sent down. He could be sent anywhere. And I think he's now a more sort of coveted asset that he can be toggled up and down between the AHL and NHL for a team that wants to acquire him. On top of that, Dennis Malgin made the team.
Your boy.
Malgin Hive, rise up. That is that the fact, like, he is the job that he did in camp is remarkable because he came in and he had to not just establish himself as as a potential NHL hopeful. He had to remind people that he existed.
Totally.
He was a punchline. Literally. He was like this Malgin Hive bit that I've been doing on Twitter. It started ironically. It's not ironic anymore. He is an NHL player. He proved it every time he was on the ice in the preseason. He was making things happen. Surprised a lot of people, except for, you know, some of the really sort of really intricate nerds online who are watching him in the Swiss League and realize he's pretty good. But like, this is he looked completely different from his little debut, or I guess his cameo, his 8-game cameo in Toronto before. And, you know, technically he made it over Nick Robertson, but the only reason Nick Robertson is not on the team right now is due to cap reasons, and whether or not John Tavares suits up for opening night, because he's been dealing with an oblique injury, whether or not he suits up for opening night will be a determination on whether or not Robertson can be called back up under the emergency designation where he won't count against the cap. But I mean, for the Leafs essentially found a great NHL asset in Dennis Malgin. They got him. That was something that I'm assuming they couldn't have thought coming into camp that Malgin was going to challenge for a roster spot, and he won one. And number two, Nick Robertson finally, like, he showed that he was a step above the rest. He showed that he was their best forward prospect. He showed that he's ready, that he could potentially play in an NHL top six, and he will once the money allows them to. I think it's great to see, and I think that if you're the Leafs, you are overjoyed that you got this outcome from these two players.
Yeah, and then at this point, you just hope that Malgin can produce in the regular season, and that you can get Robertson into the lineup. And again, that is the challenge of when you have so much salary wrapped up in your top guys, and you are so close to the salary cap, literally $4. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the intrigue in Toronto, right? Is making sure that you can actually ice the best roster possible.
Yes.
Based on all these off ice factors. And it, you know, it's going to be a challenge for them, but we'll see what happens. And, you know, Tavares is kind of the key there, because mm-hmm. he is a big money player that obviously also dealing with an injury.
Right, and now. if he misses, so the situation essentially is, if he misses the first game, the Leafs will have to dress like 19 players, but then that triggers their eligibility to call up Nick Robertson under emergency circumstances. Cause I believe they have to play one game. They have to play one game sort of that shorthanded, and then the league can be like, oh yes, now we can step in. Now we can give that to you.
Right.
I want to talk, those are the rest of the teams that are really interesting. I want to talk about some LTIR replacements, because this is, and not very long, but this is incredible. Like, this is remarkable, because I want to just put into context, getting a couple hundred thousand dollars, like getting within a couple hundred thousand dollars for your LTIR pool space is extremely hard. Like, you have to really maneuver some things. It is remarkable. And here are some of the, I want to go from bottom to top here.
Right.
The Edmonton Oilers, with their LTIR placement, you know, heading into the regular season, they had to lock it in, be compliant. They have $167 in cap space.
Wow.
$167. That's remarkable. The Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that is always doing this, always going crazy with the LTIR pool. Do you want to take a guess how much they have?
I'm going to say $98.
$33.
Wow.
In cap space. the Vegas Golden Knights, who, and this was reflected in the extremely specific Nick Hague contract. I believe it was 2.245, and then like the dollars were like 6.43 or something extremely. They have $16 in cap space.
Amazing.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, as I said, $4 in cap space. And the piece de resistance, the creme de la creme, I have no idea how they made this happen, yet they did. The Vancouver Canucks, they have exactly $0 in cap space. It was right on the nose.
Wow.
Not a single penny to move in either direction. We don't even have pennies anymore.
That's right.
But even if we did,
yeah,
they wouldn't have any to move in either direction.
That's right.
To be fair, they're not that great of a team, so it's kind of worrying that they're that tight to the cap. But who am I to judge?
Yeah.
The fact that this team is, excuse me, that close. My body is just rejecting this information. It's so crazy.
Shout out to the capologist.
Please, for the love of God, luxury tax.
Yeah, I, it's to the point now where you're hiring all these people for off ice in the front office to make sure that you're cap compliant, and you're doing all these like mm-hmm. mathematical gymnastics.
Yeah.
This is like, just fix the system.
Just fix, like, where Vegas is paying, technically, I guess, paying Shea Weber like $7.5 million this year to play. He's not going to play. He's not a Vegas Golden Knight, and yet they needed him.
Yeah.
It's crazy. All right. Because this has been such a pressure-packed show, we're not going to do mailbag questions.
Yes.
We're just going to go to rapid fire. I believe it is Ryan's turn to rapid fire me.
Indeed it is.
Hit me. Let's go.
Rapid fire time. Okay. So I know from your Twitter account that you like to cook.
I do like to cook.
So here's my question. What's the dumbest thing you've ever cooked? Like something where you were like, this would be great, and it was a disaster.
That's a really, really good question.
Thank you.
The dumbest thing I've ever cooked. There was one night where I was really, like, I was craving just like junk, you know? And so I remember, I think it was an Epic Mealtime thing where they made like a grilled cheeseburger. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to make a burger.
Yeah.
But instead of, and I think Burger Priest sells it, but not to the extent that I did it. Where it's a burger, but each bun is a full grilled cheese.
Right.
So I did that, but I went ham. Like I did. And this was a time when I had picked up, for some reason, I was going to like a dinner party of some sort. And so I was in charge of bringing the cheeses.
Uh-huh.
So I went to a great shop in Kensington. It's a specialty cheese shop, Kensington Market, where I used to live. And I got all these different kinds of cheeses. And there was like truffle Gruyere. There was, you know, it cost me like $60 worth of cheeses. It was crazy. And I had them, and, you know, everyone really enjoyed them, but there was a lot left over. And so they're like, just take home the cheese with you, Mike. Like, you bought it. Like, why don't you? Like, and I'm like, okay, cool. So for the grilled cheese, I obviously did the cheddar and all that. But
right.
I added like maple smoked brie. And like it was really cool. And then for the burgers, I did a double. add a little bit of bacon in there, and then, nice. Then the same thing. Put it together. I ate it, and it felt like I had eaten like a solid lead anvil in my body for the next like couple for the next couple days. Like legitimately, right. it was hampering my ability to move. And I'm like, never again.
Right.
I went like to burn that off. I went on. I think it was like, cause I can't run because of my knee right now. So I go on these really long hikes, and I went in total in that week, I did about 120 kilometers of hiking.
Wow.
To burn that off. Amazing. And it still didn't feel right. Like I would say maybe like 3 months ago or something. And I still feel like there's a little bit of it left in my body.
Amazing.
So look, it tasted really good, but the shame, not just the after effects, but the shame involved in that, it's not worth it. I'm sorry, guys.
Fair. So for me, back when I was like first dating what would become my wife, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to make homemade salsa.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was even pineapple salsa at that, because I'm a fan.
Okay, before you get started on this shouldn't be that hard. Making salsa is not really that
hard. It's not hard, but what I realized, it takes so long, and I bought like $20 worth of ingredients, where it's like,
a jar is like five.
A jar is like $5. It's like, this is a huge waste of my time spent, boiling down all the ingredients and doing all that, and it's like, just buy salsa. It's really one of those things where it's like, it's not worth it to make it yourself.
There really, like really quick to this, like there was, I think it was 2 weeks ago where I was really tired, but I was really hungry. And I was like, you know what? I think I have some flour left over. Like I'm going to make, I'll make like a pizza for myself, but like the dough, like from scratch, cause I can just whip that up.
Yeah.
But I realized I didn't have enough flour. But I still went ahead. I'm like, it'll be fine. It was like glue.
Yeah.
And I use like, I obviously like wipe down my counter and everything before I knead it. But like this thing like fused itself to my counter. So I had to like spend the next day like literally chiseling this dough glue with yeast in it, like chipping it off. It was, there's still little like bits of it that I've been trying to wipe off. Very dumb.
Yeah. Damn. All right. Next question.
Hit me.
What's an NHL arena you have not been to yet that you would like to go to?
I've been to a shockingly small amount of NHL arenas in that I've been
to. So you have
to,
many choices.
I've been to the old Joe Louis Arena. Mm-hmm. I have been to, obviously, Scotiabank Arena / Air Canada Center, mm-hmm. Work purposes mainly. Mm-hmm. And I've been to Ball Arena and
Amalie
Arena, and that is it.
Wow.
I have not been to, so I would really like to go to Seattle's Arena.
Yeah,
I've heard, the natural lighting in there is something I'm very interested to see, especially for a morning skate, because I have a feeling that the sun is just going to wreak havoc on the sight lines on that rink. I don't know why they would do that, because if you look at certain NFL stadiums, like for example, in Dallas, they have sort of like a half covered roof.
Yeah.
So one side of the field for half the game is like just getting blasted with sunlight, totally. And the other is not. And so it's actually like a detriment to the team that's starting on that side. I don't know why you would build a hockey arena with that, but natural light is always nice. I like to do that. Mm-hmm. I would like to go just to see what it's like. I know this is a very weird option, but I'd like to see what it's like to go to the Saddle Dome because I know it's falling apart. I'd like to see that. And I'd also like walking on the catwalk to get to the press box, I think is pretty cool. And obviously Vegas is. I think mm-hmm. T-Bone will be really cool. I just want to see the ambiance, like the stuff. But I thought that Ball Arena really surprised me.
It was very nice.
I thought it was a really nice arena.
Yeah.
Really nice facilities. Great buffets there for us. The best donut I've ever had that also exploded all over me. It was a white powder donut. So I looked like friggin' Tony Montana for a little bit there.
Yeah.
It was really good. I'd like to enjoy that. Nice. Yeah. What about you? I feel like you've been to way more than I have. So
I've been to most at this point,
okay.
But I have not been to Anaheim, and I hear that Anaheim has a very nice arena, Honda.
Really?
Center. Yes. So I would like to. I'd like to check out Anaheim. I'm intrigued about it. And see, I haven't been to Seattle yet. I would like to see Seattle as well.
See, probably. I like the one place I would not want to go to is Columbus, because I don't want to hear that cannon.
Fair. Like it's loud.
I've heard.
Yeah.
And I'm someone who just hates jump scares. Like I can watch a horror movie all day, every day,
right.
But jump scares make me angry. They don't make me scared. Like
gotcha.
If someone, if Michael Myers jumps out of the closet and was like, bleh, I'm just like, oh, F you, man. Like, I'm trying to fight the screen.
Right.
I feel like if we were sitting next to each other, you would just be getting me getting progressively more angry
gotcha.
As the game went on. I feel like I'm not a pleasant person to be around when that happens. So
fair.
I'm doing it for you.
Okay, good. Okay. Give me a personal superstition.
Ooh, that's a good one. Mm. I have to have my phone, my wallet, my keys in very specific pockets.
Oh, that's good.
If I switch them up, like it really throws me off because I'm on the move a lot. Like I'm either coming to the office or going to the rink or going back from the rink or going to the subway, this, that, the other. I always have to have my phone in my right pocket, my wallet, my left, my keys in my back. And then potentially if I'm wearing a jacket, headphones in the jacket, left pocket,
gotcha.
Everything else, like whatever. But if any of those get switched up, if my phone is ever in my left pocket, like I feel weird, I feel naked. It doesn't work. So if you ever see me walking down the street and I have my phone in my left pocket, that's a clone and you need to shoot it.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's like They Live.
Exactly.
Right. Mine is like something that I don't know how I stumbled upon this, but I call it never separate the mother from the cub. And it's like, I don't like this be between like a mother and their child. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I drop my own kids off at school. It can sometimes be difficult because kids just run all over the place. But for some reason, it's like a weird vibe where it's like, if I'm between the two of them, it feels like it's off. Like, I don't know. It's just, like I say, it's a vibe thing. So
speaking of that, actually, another one is if I'm ever walking with like with a girl or a woman or whatever on the street, whether it's my mom, whether, you know, a romantic partner, sister, whatever, I always have to be on the outside. You know?
Okay.
It's always, I have to be on the outside. So if by any chance a car mounts the curb, it hits me first, doesn't hit them. Or, you know, if someone splashes, if there's a puddle and car goes by, it splashes, I take the brunt of the splash.
Gotcha.
It's just something like my parents instilled it to me is really at a really young age. Call it the safe side.
Chivalry.
And it's more of, and at this point, it's more of like a selfish thing for me where it's like, you have to be here. Like, I don't want you getting hurt, getting splashed or whatever. And a lot of people have made fun of me for it.
Fair. Okay. Next question. Ban a song from hockey arenas.
Oh, High Hopes by Panic at the Disco. Never want to hear it again. Every single stoppage in play, it's no, I'm done with it. I'm done with it. It's not that good of a song to begin with. We have our producer Connor shaking his head behind the camera, and I'm just gonna
big
speak
Panic
my,
of the Disco
I'm,
fan.
I'm gonna no, I love Panic of the Disco. New Panic of the Disco, not so much. And I think that they're like that song is just so just rammed down our throats. Not even, or and I love the song, but Blinding Lights by The Weeknd.
Uh-huh.
I think it gets played so much, like where we just have to like. It's getting to the point where it's making me not like the song, even though it's an objectively great song.
Right.
We need to stop it. And it was hurt by its placement in NHL arenas and also its placement in Super Bowl ads because he did the Super Bowl halftime show in 2020, I believe.
That sounds
cool. And so it was just like, let me enjoy the song. Don't make me hate it with oversaturation. What about you?
I'm going with Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond.
That's the cop-out answer. Come on.
Well, but here's the thing. It's like, it's not a hockey song. Like,
yeah,
they used it in other sports before. Yeah, and I think even soccer fans, they have a
it's
thing
mainly,
there.
The way that I see that song is, at Fenway Park, they sing it. I think it's like the sixth inning. Yeah. I've been to Fenway Park, beautiful place. They sing, and that's the only place I think they should do it.
Yeah. I also think that, like, there's certain songs that are specific to certain arenas that you shouldn't do otherwise, right? Like the Deo chant that they do in Montreal. It's like they've tried that in Toronto.
No.
And it's like, no, that's your rival.
Exactly.
Can't
don't do
that.
Don't
yeah.
do that.
And like, I think Colorado played Detroit Rock City during the Stanley Cup final. It's like, yo, you hate the Red Wings. You always hated
there's
the Red Wings.
There was a documentary airing at that same time
about
how much they hated each other.
Yeah. You
don't
can choose
do that.
I mean, that's a good Kiss song, but it's like, you don't have to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You got to think of that. If you're an arena DJ, you got to think of those subtle things.
Exactly. But they don't.
They don't.
No.
Some of them do. There's some very good arena
DJs.
So, all right. That's the end of Rapid Fire.
And that's
thank you
for
playing.
That's right. Yeah. So we will, we'll be back next week. I'm glad we could grab that Hockey Canada news off the top. And look, best time of the year. The season is starting. Please enjoy it. Yell at each other on Twitter. Do all that. Thank you to BetMGM McKenney, obviously, for being lovely partners. And like I said, we'll see you next week. Ryan, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.